The next passage concerning him that I wanted to discuss is his confession of who Christ is. So who can tell me that story here? So what did Jesus ask that... Right, who do men say that I am? And they answer... Right. Okay, well, first of all, they answer about who men say that he is, right? And then he says, who do you say that I am? And then yes, Peter answers, you know, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. So this is this huge, huge moment of noetic insight, okay? He's realizing that this is a divine being in front of him. This is God in the flesh. And does he know this through his own power? No, and Jesus makes that clear. You know, blessed are you, Simon Barjona. I don't have the whole thing there, but, you know, the idea is it's that because flesh and blood didn't reveal this to you, but the Spirit of God, that's not the exact thing, but that's the idea, I hope. So after this huge noetic illumination, what happens?
He denies Christ.
Right then?
No, later on.
No, but what happens almost... Okay, well, before that... exactly.
Oh, right.
So, okay, so... Peter realizes, okay, you're God in the flesh. I mean, he doesn't say exactly that, but he's realizing at some level. And then God in the flesh says to him, what? I'm going to be crucified. And Peter responds, far be it from you. And then Christ says, get behind me, Satan. And so... I think there's a couple important points here for us. And that is that you can pretty much expect that when you make progress, there's going to be the opportunity for a fall. For different reasons. I mean, one reason is that pride can easily get in there. It's like, wow. What did I just say? What did I just realize? You know, and it's like, oh, wow, that's really good. And I open myself up for a fall. And the other is, you know, who are the demons going to attack? The people who are, you know, going around, you know, doing what the demons want them to do anyway and, you know, not causing them any trouble, or the one who is beginning to make great progress in the spiritual battle. So, you know, I think forewarned is forearmed, and we need to realize that, you know, as we make progress, then there are going to be big temptations that, you know, come in the wake of that progress. But the other thing here, you know, that's really crucial, and sort of crucial as in the cross, and I wasn't trying to pun, but that Peter now has to confront Christ's death and eventually his own death and his own idea of how things should be and how things are. He had an idea, I don't know how definite it was, of what the kingdom of God is like. And it certainly didn't include that the Lord of glory would be crucified on a cross. And again, this is a moment where you either run away and say, well, there's no way, or you say, I haven't the faintest idea how this could possibly be, but you have the words of life, and we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. And so at some level, Peter is still able, he's able to do this. He's able to stay, to bear the discomfort of holiness and to bear the discomfort of having his worldview torn apart because he's with the one he loves. Okay, now what happens? Somebody mentioned it. It's a feast that's coming up soon. The Transfiguration. Okay. So, you know, in our feasts, in the Chaparian and the Kentakian, they both say something similar to, they beheld your glory as far as they could see it. I think the one says as far as they could see it. I think the other one said as far as they could bear it. Okay. And so, and Christ gives them this experience so that, and again, this is quoting the Chaparian or the Kentakian, I forget which one, so that when they would see him crucified, they would know that it was voluntary. You know, at some level, I mean, they still didn't understand very much. They were still frightened and horrified and, you know, totally let down. But they do seem to know that it was voluntary. They do seem to know that Christ did this of his own free will. I mean, it's clear. He keeps making it clear that he's doing this of his own free will, you know, as he keeps saying, I'm going this direction. But here, when they see his power, then they're, you know, beginning to realize that all the evil angels and everything in the world could do nothing if he wasn't willing to go. So at some level, you would think, well, this didn't work, did it? You know, here they were and they saw Christ, you know, shining with the light of the Godhead, and then they run away. But what would it have been like if they hadn't seen that? If they, the leaders, Peter, James, and John, had not seen him transformed, seen him transfigured. And so, you know, God, in his ineffable mercy, gives them this experience so that that little bit, they would be able to hold on to who he is. The Transfiguration is another one of those things that it's like, you know, you could talk about for hours and hours, and I don't have time to, you know, talk very much. But one thing I think really is worth stating, and this, I believe, is, you know, roughly the teaching of St. Gregory Palamas, which is that, you know, it wasn't actually Christ who was transfigured on the mountain. Christ looked the way Christ always looked. He was always shining with the light of God. What was different was that their eyes were transfigured so that they could see just a little bit of what Christ actually always looked like. So Peter obviously doesn't fully understand, but he loves Jesus, and he always wants to do something for Jesus. You know, so he says, you know, Lord, it's good for us to be here. And he suggests making booths for Jesus and Elijah and Moses. To us, that sounds like a rather crazy, like, okay, make booths? What's that about? I haven't had time to check this out, but I've heard that that does actually have a relation to the Feast of Booths, which had, I believe, some relation to the end times. I'm not completely sure. So it wasn't a completely off-the-wall suggestion. But it is also clear that he didn't know what he was saying. He loved Jesus, and he wanted to do something. But one thing, though, you see here is that he doesn't fully understand who Christ is yet. Even after this incredible, statement of faith, that you are the Son of the living God, he's sort of lumping Jesus in with Elijah and Moses. You know, it's like, okay, maybe you're bigger than them, but you're, you know, he's not understanding fully that this is the living God, and these are his two servants who are talking to him. Yes?
I've often thought about this. Do you think that even this idea of building the booths in Peter's mind might have been kind of a, you know how when we see something, we don't want it to go away? We want to hang on to it? It was a way, okay, make this permanent.
Well, it's possible. Yeah, that could very well be. I don't know. But you know, actually, Leo the Great said something like, "Christ doesn't answer Peter when he suggests making the booths." And Leo says, "It's not because the suggestion is wicked, but it's because Christ needs to go to the cross." And that's a paraphrase, not exactly what he said. But that would, I think that sort of implies what you were saying, was because if you were going to have booths there, the idea would be that they stay there. Yeah. And so Christ, in our need, not his need, but our need for him to go to the cross, just ignores the suggestion. So Christ is shining with the light of the Godhead. And then what happens? They hear a voice.
"This is my beloved son."
Well, yeah, "This is my beloved son with whom I am well pleased." Then what?
"Hear him."
Yeah, hear him or listen to him. So when we don't fully understand, at least we know who we have to listen to. And when we know who we need to listen to, then we need to go ahead and do it to the best of our ability. And again, that's back to the thing about if you're lost in the amusement park, it's, okay, what did Mom and Dad say? And then do it the best you can. And maybe you don't know where the office is, but then you find someone who knows where the office is and you keep getting help. Okay. So here is Peter, who has made this definitive confession of faith, seeing Christ transfigured. And then he asked Christ, "How often shall I forgive my brother? Up to seven times?" Right, and yeah, and Christ answers, you know, 70 times 7. And so, you know, he's not a saint yet, despite witnessing the transfiguration. And, you know, frankly, I mean, most of us, if we could get to forgiving our brother 7 times a day, that's pretty good. He was being pretty generous in his estimation, you know, from the world's viewpoint. But, you know, he's still grasping his way along to some degree. And I think that's just important for us to realize, like, you know, if St. Peter had to grasp his way along, you know, in the middle of all these incredible things, it's like, okay, you know, we just have to keep taking the next step, and we're going to have, you know, big moments, and then we're going to have big moments in the opposite direction sometimes, or just, you know, petty little things that derail us. You know, when you're beginning, you know, your noose is beginning to clear, and it's like, oh, there's Jesus, okay, I'm following Jesus, and then, like, something happens, and then you lose your focus, and it's like, okay, well, okay, there's Jesus, you know, and you just keep following. Okay.